Hello and welcome to this podcast. The focus of this episode is the emergence of newer anti-VEGF agents for the treatment of neovascular age-related macular degeneration and diabetic macular edema, specifically faricimab and aflibercept 8 mg. In this episode, you'll hear part of a conversation from this year's Envision Summit held in Puerto Rico, featuring Dr. Adrian Scott of Wilmer Eye Institute, Dr. Justine Cheng of the University of Illinois Chicago, Dr. Hongwin Hua of Bascom Palmer Eye Institute, and Dr. Cheryl Reynolds of the Nova Southeastern University College of Optometry. First up, you'll hear from Dr. Reynolds, who will discuss some of the traditional challenges in managing patients with these conditions with older anti-VEGF agents.
I'm really excited to be here to collaborate with my colleagues, the retinal specialists, to have this discussion because there is a large number of unmet needs and limitation of traditional therapies in our patients with neovascular AMD as well as with diabetic macular edema. We're also seeing an uptick in a number of patients that have these conditions. Current research shows that approximately 10 million people have some sort of diabetic retinopathy as well as diabetic macular edema, as well as we're seeing an uptick in neovascular AMD. We all know what the treatment has been in recent years for patients that have these conditions. We understand the role of vascular endothelial growth factors in promoting, neovascular glaucoma as well as diabetic maculopathy and diabetic retinopathy. What's new to the table in the last few years is angiopoietin. We know that angiopoietin 2 uptake leads to vascular instability as well as having anti-VEGF or VEGF being released, and that leads to neovascular AMD. And the same thing in our patients that have diabetic retinopathy and diabetic macular edema. There's an uptick in angiopoietin 2, which is again causes vascular instability as well as vascular endothelial growth factors, as well as other pro-inflammatory cytokines that are responsible. So what we have on the table, what we've had on the table for many years, is our first generation anti-vascular endothelial growth factor agents for neovascular AMD and diabetic macular edema. So when we look at data and look at clinical trials versus real-world anti-VEGF results, we'll see that real-world visual acuity outcome falls short of clinical trials. If you look at the data, clinical trials versus real-world study, a one-year outcome, looking at ranibizumab, 0.5 milligram, you can see that the patients in the trials, whether it's the Anchor, Marina studies, they did really well. But when you look at real-world, you see that the number of injections for those patients fall a little bit lower. And so the frequent monitoring and injections are a significant burden for our patients, their caregivers, and physician, which is what was found in these studies. What's new in a recent study that was published, a new database review, showed that decline in visual acuity, injection frequency over time with older anti-VEGF. And you can see here from the study, again, this was a large database, multi-center study, that the number of injections fell as the patients, as the years go by for patients getting the injection the first year, you can see that the number of injections, 7.2, 5.6, and as you go to year six, you can see that that number fell low to about 4.2. The same thing happened with our patients' visual acuity. During the first few years of the injection every year, the patient did really well, but as the patient's number of injection decreased, so did their visual acuity. So these findings suggest that most patients with neovascular AMD may find it difficult to adhere to the requirements for frequent individual anti-VEGF injection and could therefore be at risk of experiencing poor visual outcomes.
Dr. Hua and Dr. Cheng, followed by Dr. Reynolds and Dr. Scott, share their perspectives on some of the challenges that put up treatment barriers for patients who need care for these conditions.
Some of the key barriers to patients getting the treatment that they need is access to care. And so in our older patients with neovascular macular degeneration, we actually find that the patients are eager to come, but it's getting a ride or having their family being able to come and support them on their day of their injections, the frequency of the injections with the older generation or the older first generation anti-VEGF agents. And then also for our diabetic macular edema patients, they're younger, they're working, it's hard for them to find time to make it to the clinic. So those are some of the most important barriers for them getting the treatment that they need.
I also think it's hard to sell to patients that you have to need, you know, X amount of injections and I have to treat you according to the trials, because if I treat you according to the trials, then you should be getting injections at roughly every month for the first year. So that's very hard to tell patients that, and I think might actually scare them away.
Can I also add that for our patients with diabetic macular edema, some of the barriers are those social determinants of health. I think really just understanding their disease, understanding that they have a condition that's going to potentially lead them to vision loss. Again, we talked about access earlier, you know, access to care, but also fear. For a lot of my patients, it's really just a fear of having a needle in the eye. And I think for me as an optometrist, before I refer these patients, because we disproportionately see these patients more so in our clinic before they see the retinal specialist, is to allay our patients' fears and to talk to them about the procedure that they're going to get done. I think it's important that optometrist plays an important role in that, educating the patient on what to expect when they do go to the retinal specialist, because I think fear is really a big factor.
Yeah, that's such a good point, Dr. Reynolds. I see that as well. And I think it's important to reassure the patient about the importance of vision loss potential and making sure that they know and understand, and those who care for them know and understand there is a potential for vision loss. You know, it's a heartbreaking disease because diabetes can not only take the eyesight, but also systemically they're dealing with a lot of things, kidneys and other sequelae from their diabetic end organ disease. So it's also confounding, you know, our ability to care for the eye. The patient could have the best intentions to come back for their visit schedule, but could get sick from other reasons or have trouble making it back.
Next, Dr. Cheryl asks the panel about their algorithms for which agents to use in which patients in which order.
I do have a question for my colleagues. As an optometrist and my optometric colleagues that are listening online or in the audience, when we refer our patients to the retinal specialist for treatment, which typically is the first line? Are we typically doing the extended treatment, faricimab or HD, you know, aflibercept 8 milligrams, or are we doing, based on what the insurance says, maybe you may do ranibizumab the first time. So I just wanted to know, because one of the things I'm excited about for our patients when we talked about barriers or what are some of the factors that impact patients coming back and getting their injection is the monthly injection, the time, you know, getting someone to carry them to the office every month for these injections. You know, just I have to go back every month is what the patients complain to me when they come back as to why they don't go back to see their retinal specialist. So I just wanted to know, as an optometrist, are we doing the extended treatment as first line?
Unfortunately, insurance often dictates how we're able to treat our patients, and, you know, step therapy is quite common, and so oftentimes we'll have to start with bevacizumab on a monthly dose for X amount of time before we're able to jump to the second generation agents. And I think everybody's still working on their own algorithm. Mm-hmm. Personally, myself, I've felt more and more comfortable. I wasn't an early adopter of jumping to a second generation agent right away after Avastin, but as the safety data has come out, you know, both agents are quite safe, and so I feel more comfortable jumping to those second generation agents more quickly.
Yeah, so Dr. Reynolds, I think it's all over the place, quite a mixed bag, but the insurance company often, unfortunately, does have a lot of sway over what we describe. But the good part about it is we have lots of different options to discuss with the patient. Yeah, I also want to point out and just emphasize that intravitreal bevacizumab is off-label for these treatments, but oftentimes the least expensive option and preferred by certain insurers as well. Dr. Renz, I want to bring you back in from a question from the chat. What is your approach as you discussed fear of these injections to the patient?
So when my patients come to me and they are concerned about that treatment, I usually just let them know that the eyes would be numb so that they won't have any fear, you know, any pain when they have the injection. But I also, it's important for us as optometrists to let them know that that's the latest, most effective treatment. A lot of times they need to know what is the most effective treatment for them, as opposed to what they've heard their family member said or someone said about laser to the eyes. The most effective, the most up-to-date treatment for your condition would be the injection in the eye of a medication to help minimize the bleeding and the swelling in the eyes. So that's how I sort of allay their fears. And I think it's just really important for optometrists to have that discussion before they go to the retinal specialist's office. Because when they do go and they just have the injection, they come back, I'm not going back. And so then again, that is another challenge for us as we partner to make sure that our patients get the best care. So I just discussed that the eyes would be numb and that they won't feel any pain.
So I love that answer. Really kind of discuss with your patient or engage, why is it, or what was your experience like, or why did you have a negative experience? I mean, I've had patients that literally self-extend their treatment interval because the insurer wouldn't pay, and they said, well, I can't afford this, so I'm going to, you know, be treated, you know, every, I don't know, 3 or 4 months then, and that's not quite what I had discussed with them. So, you know, if I'd known the barriers, then perhaps I could have intervened or helped facilitate treatment more close to what was medically indicated by our discussion, rather than having their financial situation to dictate their treatment.
And finally, Dr. Scott turns the panel to a discussion of additional strategies for retina specialists and optometrists to keep in mind as they co-manage patients with NAMD and DME.
This is one I'm particularly excited about. So this was one of our pre-program questions talking about additional opportunities for neovascular AMD and DME management. So talking about the role of OCT. Okay, so I'll be a little interactive. Raise your hand if you're an OCT person. Me too. Yeah, good. So we have OCT and OCTA for diagnosis and monitoring in the setting of eye care clinics. And there's a home OCT that's under investigation from the DRCR right now enrolling to be able to tell the patient does it themselves. And there's a device that they're able, you can get a readout. So you can tell, is there fluid? Is their treatment worsening? So the home OCT is definitely really exciting. There's also the role of patient counseling in neovascular AMDs, such as common sense things, reduced smoking and UV exposure and cardiovascular health. I always say anything that's good for your heart is good for your eyes. So not smoking, you know, eating a diet that's low in fats. And then DME, of course, we know that decreasing the hemoglobin A1C and the overall glycemic control improves your overall outcomes in diabetic eye disease. So Dr. Reynolds, I'll turn it back to you. How can optometrists and general ophthalmologists optimize the early detection and diagnosis of neovascular AMD and DME?
Well, again, for an optometrist, I'm really excited to have the OCT, again, looking at structure, but also OCTA has really kind of changed our landscape. And I think early detection is so critically important. Patient education, increased awareness, and getting them to my colleagues in a timely manner helps to reduce loss of vision and some of the issues that we see with dropout of patient, fear of the injection. I just think it's so important for us to educate our patient as optometrists about what to expect when they do go to the retinal specialist's office. Again, it sort of decreased that chair time, but they also know what the latest in treatment is for their conditions.
That's excellent. You actually helped with a few of the bullet points here, and I also want to bring in the role of the primary care doctor, endocrinologist, in management of the patient, because we all have to work together, particularly with our patients who have diabetes, if they understand their disease process and that we need to coordinate within the healthcare system with these patients.
That's it for today. Thank you for joining us for this podcast.